Welcome to This Is Money podcast, sponsored by Charles Stanley Direct. I'm Georgie Frost, and joining me today is Helen Crane. And coming up, well, we thought we'd give you a bit of a breather on Trump and tariffs this week. I mean, it will come up, but we want to instead turn our attention to mortgages and whether two-year fixes are back in fashion, first-time buyers getting older, but at least they're borrowing less from their folks, is this the end for 4% savings, and could we be about to see TVs get a lot cheaper? Don't forget you can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app.
Take control of your finances with Charles Stanley Direct. Invest, save, coach, or plan. Using technology where it's helpful and people where it matters. Our website and app make trading cost-effective and flexible. But we're more than just an online investment service. We're here for you regardless of your financial needs or if your life takes an unexpected turn. Your finances, your way. Take control today with Charles Stanley Direct. Sign up now.
Investment involves risk.
But first, before we get started, we are calling on you, dear listener, for your help. Obviously, listening to us is up there with your favourite part of the week. Recording it for us is definitely up there for us. But this is your pod and we want to continue to make it better for you. So we are running a short survey to find out just a little bit more about you guys. We want to know what you like about the pod, what you'd like to see more of perhaps from us. It would be really good if you could just take a few minutes, super valuable for us, just to answer some of the questions. The link is in the show notes and I'll put it on my Insta page too. All right? Right. It's back to it. Helen. Mortgages and how long to fix for. Now, the gap between rates on 2 and 5 year fixes has been narrowing. For those with a 40% deposit or equity, the cheapest 2 year mortgage on the market at the time of recording is just 0.18% cheaper than the cheapest 5 year deal. Now, if you take a look over the last couple of years, there was some clear blue sea between the number of people preferring to fix for longer, but now the popularity of 2 years has really bounced back. But why? And is it better to go short, Helen, or to go long? So Helen, what is happening out there? I love that graph, by the way, of the 2 and 5 year and how many people are going for one and the other. It says a lot, but obviously we can't show a graph on the podcast. So explain it.
So there's been loads of change in this area in the last few years as mortgages have essentially gone a bit mad. So just do a little bit of a potted history. Until about 2018, people generally just preferred two-year mortgages. They're a bit cheaper than five-year mortgages and it's a bit more flexible. I think people just thought, you know, if I can fix for two, it's cheaper. Why not? I've got that flexibility. If something changes, I can get out of it in 2 years' time. And that was just generally where people preferred to go. Then rates started falling and that changed everything a bit. So people, rightly, when they could get a mortgage for, you know, 2%, maybe even less than 2%, 1% interest at some point, they thought, hang on, actually, this rate is extremely cheap. Why wouldn't I just fix it for 5 years? You know, things might not get much better. Now, not everyone thought that. There were still people fixing mortgages at like 0.9% for 2 years, which in retrospect looks absolutely mad looking at rates of kind of 4% now. But I do think there's a bit of a psychological thing. Some people just don't like fixing into a five-year mortgage. It seems like a bit more of a commitment and people, you know, just aren't always keen. However, for the last few years, things have obviously been very volatile and people have been going for 5 years again. They've been thinking, you know, things aren't necessarily, you know, looking great. It's when mortgage rates spiked in 2022 and again in 2023, people kind of thought, what if these go even higher? What if I fix in 2 years? And it's 7%, 8%, which sounds a bit crazy now, but there was definitely a time around that Liz Truss mini budget when, you know, people were quite scared. Now that's all turned around again. So we come to today and there's this data, as you said, out this week, which shows that people are looking at 2 years again. And that's because of these predictions that, you know, interest rates are on the way down. Maybe in 2 years' time, the base rate could be 3%-ish. Things are on the way down and then you want to fix for a shorter time so that hopefully you can get on a cheaper rate quicker in the future. And interestingly, I am bringing up tariffs for the first time, I'm afraid, but as I said, I
Oh,
will.
we've only got about 5 minutes
I
in, Helen. I
know.
promised a break from it. All right,
I'm
then. All
sorry,
right.
but it is irrelevant. It'll be a short mention. So obviously everything that's happened this week, which we will get into, and which I think if you listen to last week's podcast, Simon gave some really good advice on what people should kind of do among all this volatility. So do listen back to that. But just to mention it briefly, the tariffs have led to predictions of maybe a recession or a bit of an economic downturn, and that has made the markets predict that the Bank of England could bring the base rate down more quickly than we thought. So previously, they were saying maybe two more base rate cuts this year, so that would take it down to maybe 4%, but now they're saying it could be 3.5% by the end of the year. So that's another thing that has made people think, mortgages could well get cheaper in the next couple of years' time. And we've actually seen a couple of lenders this week bring out cheap 2-year deals. So the big one this week, it was a Coventry Building Society mortgage. It is a 2-year and it's at 3.89% interest. That's for people buying with a 35% deposit or more. And that's really interesting because for the last couple of years, 5-year fixes have been cheaper than 2-year. We're now seeing the best rate on the market is a 2-year. So that is really looks to be turning around.
I thought some interesting things going on. You mentioned there what's happening this week. So I got a notification about Nationwide reducing its minimum income for getting a mortgage for its helping hand. You just need £35,000. Minimum combined income will remain the same at £55,000. That you can only get, I believe, a 5 year plus mortgage length for that. But I wondered, like, is this indicating changes in the market? But are we going to see a little bit more easing, do you think?
I think you're right. Banks have been becoming a bit more flexible, especially over the last few months, actually. I think there's a sense that the mortgage market is, I mean, I say this with all the madness of this week, I feel like I maybe shouldn't, but it seems like things are calming down a little bit, mortgage rate wise. We haven't seen a really big rate spike since 2023. So I think lenders are looking at it a bit laterally and thinking, it's obviously still extremely tough to get on the housing ladder for many first-time buyers, and maybe are some of the requirements a bit too strict in terms of loan to income. Obviously these rules came in after the financial crisis, and there's a good reason that those rules are there, so we don't see people over borrowing and really getting into trouble. But I agree, I think there is an argument that it is a bit too strict, and it's preventing some people from getting on the housing ladder who maybe should be able to, particularly if you look at perhaps single people it's obviously much more difficult with just a single income to sort of meet those loan to income requirements. A single person has to earn much more to get a mortgage than a couple. So yeah, I agree. It's getting a bit more flexible, and I long may that continue. I do think anything that makes it easier for first time buyers to get on the ladder within reason is a good thing.
Yeah, within reason. I like that caveat. I will bring in this new data that TSB has released recently. It does shed a bit of light on how tough it is for people, young people, to get on the property ladder. I mean, there's only one region in Britain where the typical first-time buyer still gets on the housing ladder in their 20s. The majority of first-time buyers, and they looked at England, Scotland, and Wales, were 32 or 33, and that's up from 31 just a year ago. So, I mean, what's going on here? Obviously, some people would prefer to wait, not everybody wants to buy a home, but actually, I think you could probably argue that there is an affordability thing going on here.
Absolutely. I think you're right to say that part of this is lifestyle changes. Obviously over the decades, the age of a first-time buyer has got much higher. And people are generally settling down a bit later, getting married later. So I think part of it is, young people aren't settling down as quickly, but it is absolutely also an affordability thing, especially over the last few years we've seen high mortgage rates, house prices absolutely rocketing over the pandemic, and I think that absolutely has had a part to play. People are just having to save longer to get that deposit that they need. And also, I think increasingly, people having to wait till they earn a bit more so they can meet the income requirements for the mortgage, or having to wait till, unfortunately, they're in a couple so they can actually afford to pay a mortgage, which is a bit of a sad state of affairs. So this data from TSB, as you said, every region of the UK, apart from the lucky people of Yorkshire and Humber, who managed to get onto the property ladder at 29, which is still old. It's mad. You think, some people have been working since the age of 16, and it's taking them 13 years to manage to get on the housing ladder. So most areas, it is the age of 32. The North of England, 30, so not quite as bad there. And the East Midlands and London have the highest age of 33, which, to be honest, I was actually a bit surprised that London wasn't older. But there we go. There must still be some people managing to do it in their 20s. But yeah, I think it just really shows that how difficult it is.
Where are they getting the deposits from here? Is the bank of mum and dad still wide open, or are they waiting longer so that they can have build up their own savings?
A bit of both, I think. So TSB asked where people were getting their deposits from and whether they were getting any money from a friend or family member. So 30% of people said that they did get help from someone else for their deposit. Interestingly, that has fallen in a year from 34%. So there has been a drop in people getting money from family. It is predominantly family. I think, I'm not going to say that young people don't need help from their family to buy a house anymore, because obviously that isn't the case. This is a long-term trend of people, needing an extra help to get on the property ladder in many cases. I think what is happening here is that it is the change in mortgage rates. So last year, obviously, at some points, mortgage rates were really high, meaning that people sometimes wanted to put down a bigger deposit so they could get a cheaper mortgage. Someone maybe who would have put down a 5% deposit previously might have really wanted to go for a 10% just to bring their monthly payments down a little bit. And I think maybe this increase in people getting help from family is something to do with that. People are going to their parents and saying, look, I've saved up the deposit I needed, but I now just would really like a little boost just to get me over that line. It's going to save me, I don't know, £100 a month on my mortgage. Could you help? And I think parents are looking at that and thinking, yeah, you know what? They've tried. They've put in their end of the bargain, and where they're able to are helping them out.
So, any tips, Helen, as someone who, well, we both have, is it in the last year or so we've both got on the property ladder? Tips?
Well, it's difficult to do tips, isn't it? Because I feel like it's never easy, and you don't want to say, well, here's my little hack. I stopped buying coffee. But I would
Yeah, but I
say
live with my parents and then they gave me a £100,000 deposit. Yes,
exactly.
exactly.
Yeah, you never want to be that person. I would say, if I'm honest, I didn't really start saving till quite late in life. For I only started saving when I was 30. So I'm already past the buying a house in Yorkshire and Humber when I even started saving for a deposit. But I would say, regular saving is really important. Even if you can't put in much every month, just making an effort to put in something, really, it just kind of gets you in the mindset of, this is your goal. And even if you can't put in loads every month, you're making an effort. I think also saving into the right account is really important. I think the time I saved for a deposit, I made about maybe about £1,000 in savings interest, which is, not insignificant. And there are still really good easy access accounts out there. Whack your deposit savings in a 4.5% easy access, and that can easily give you a little bit of a boost. Obviously important to look at ISAs as well if your deposits you've been saving for years and your deposits get on the bigger side, to make sure you don't get caught by tax. But yeah, I mean, it is tricky, and there's no magic solution to it, but just do what you can. Ask for help from your mum and dad if they will, like many people in this survey are doing. And good luck, I guess, is all I can really say.
Yes, keep going. And actually, renting isn't that bad. You can live in some really cool places, right? And you can travel around for work. And I hate this sort of idea that, oh, the be all and the end all is to buy a house. Look, yes, I suppose it's all right, but I'm not doing too badly, and I waited to buy a property, and I got to live in some amazing places. And you know what? If you have a bad relationship, not speaking from personal experience here, but you can get out really quickly.
I've done exactly the same, and I think, yeah, being able to cut and run is a big benefit in some things.
Right, exactly. But did you go, Helen? Now I want to go back to the. I feel like we've gone around the houses. But did you go for a 2 or 5 year?
I went for 5 years, so this was about 6 months ago that we moved in. So we were sorting our mortgage sort of last summer, and it was a really tricky one. I spent quite a lot of time ruminating on it, which my partner found extremely boring. So we went for 5 year, I think, because at the time for us, the 5 year rates were quite a bit cheaper than 2 year. And if I'm quite honest, we'd put absolutely everything we had into getting the deposit. And I just thought, if I can save a little bit every month on the mortgage payments by fixing for 5 years, I think that money would be useful to me, which is what sort of drove my decision. Now, is that looking like a good choice when mortgage rates are on the way down? I mean, maybe not, but I think the way you need to think of it is, are you happy with this level of payments? Can you afford them? And do you want the security, maybe, of just fixing for 5 years? You know, all right, I'll kick myself in a year's time if I could have got a much cheaper mortgage, but you know, the mortgage payment's manageable. My budget is fixed for the next 4.5 years. It's almost exactly the same as what I was paying in rent previously. So the way I justify it to myself is, well, if I stayed in my rented flat, then the landlord would have jacked the rent up a couple of times in that time. So overall, I'm on a winner.
I went for 5 years as well, and I think it brings me back to the early days of the podcast. And I remember Lee saying, blink and you'll miss 2 years, basically. And I can't believe I'm already over a year already. And the idea of having to, in the next, 9 months, start going through the whole process again, which just fill me with dread. I'll be honest, I'm quite lazy. But I know myself, right? I don't want to have to deal with that sort of admin if I don't have to, and it worked out for me. But what should be the questions that you're asking yourself to get to that decision?
There's a few questions to ask yourself. One of the main ones is, do you think you're going to move in that time? So you don't want to take a 5 year and then in 2 or 3 years' time, you think, actually, I want to upsize. You know, we've had another kid, we need another bedroom, because there are obviously exit fees to get out of your mortgage, which you don't want to end up paying if you can avoid it. So how long are you going to stay? Are your financial circumstances going to change if you're maybe likely to get a pay rise or something in the next couple of years, and you could afford to put more into the mortgage? Maybe a shorter fix is better if you can renegotiate on better terms in maybe a couple of years' time. And yeah, again, just, can you afford the repayments? Are they comfortable for you? And where do you think interest rates are going? Which is obviously extremely hard to call, as we've seen over the last few days and weeks. But if you think rates are going to go down, then you might want to take a shorter fix. If you think they're not, maybe sticking with a longer one. Or if you just like the security of knowing exactly what your monthly payments are going to be for a longer time, then you know, absolutely go for a longer fix. It's all a personality thing, and then also making a call on where you think the markets are going.
I know it's really hard to call, isn't it, Helen? Which is why I've got that question next for you. What are the experts predicting? What's the longer term forecast for all of this? It is so hard. I've said this for the last, I don't know how many years. Financial crisis, we've had Brexit, we've had COVID, now we've got Trump. It seems never ending that this volatility, but what are the experts saying?
It's tricky to predict. So we've been looking at swap rates over the last few days, which are, I won't get into it too much, but the kind of money market rates, which show where banks think interest rates will be in 2 or 5 years' time. So they went down quite substantially when the tariffs, say the T word quietly, first happened. They've been edging down for a while, but they took a bit of a dip, and people were thinking maybe a 3.5% mortgage by the end of the year. They're now edging up again as things have changed. But there's a sort of longer term downward trend. You know, we've now got mortgages under 4%, which is a big deal. You know, we haven't had those for a while. I think, you know, downward in the longer term, but I think I've said this on the podcast before, I really don't think we're going to get into 1% or 2% interest rates, at least for the next couple of years. You know, we had it good for a while, but I think, talking to the experts, maybe if things go on as they are, settling maybe somewhere in the sort of mid to low 3% next year. But again, anything could change.
That's it for part one.
I'm joined now by Rob Morgan of Charles Stanley Direct for our weekly Investing Explained feature. Rob, it's been a tumultuous start to the new tax year on the markets, to say the least. What's your advice for those looking to invest some of their ISA or SIPP allowance?
Yes, significant volatility in the markets right now with some big moves down and up and still uncertainty at this moment. But if you are looking to use fresh ISA and pension allowances for the new tax year, that can offer some opportunity. You are fortunate enough to have some dry powder to invest at least and possibly buy that dip in the markets. And often when markets are falling and the stock market is making headline news, that tends to be a good time to buy over the longer term, as Warren Buffett put it, be greedy when others are fearful. Clearly, this is a fast-moving situation, and we'll have to see what pans out. But if you have no plans to cash in your investments in, say, the next 5 or 10 years or even longer, you can afford to ride out that volatility. So I think this is a time for sticking to your plan, rather like the COVID-led volatility we saw 5 years ago. The path out's uncertain from this sort of point. But these sorts of episodes tend to give rise to an opportunity to stock up on investments for longer term. And while we always point out that past performance is not necessarily a guide to the future, you only tend to get those very good opportunities in moments of great uncertainty, which is, of course, ironically why it's so psychologically difficult to harness them. In the short term, with those fast-moving trading conditions and all sorts of political and economic outcomes, some caution is warranted, I'd say, but realistically, not possible to time the market with any accuracy, I think, with what's happening. But there's comfort in the long run that it's the length of time that you invest for that matters far more than the precise point that you buy in at. And the longer you invest for, that is more and more the case. So don't get too hung up on the timing side of things. Think about the next decade, not what is happening in front of you right now. And only buy something that you're happy to own in the long term. And if you are concerned about the high level of volatility in the shorter term, look to phase your money in, either by making monthly contributions, adding that money to SIPPs and ISAs in the form of cash, and then buying the investment in chunks, or doing so via direct debit, say, and that will average out the price you buy in as you go along. And I do like the monthly approach. It's very mechanical and it takes the emotion out of things, and that can be a really good thing when markets are moving around quickly. If you do want to invest in the stock market, you could look to limit that volatility with more stable dividend-paying stocks, perhaps via an equity income fund for diversification. Companies that pay regular and growing dividends tend to be more stable, and they offer that regular income that can be reinvested. So a portfolio biased towards those tends to be a bit more resilient in difficult times, but it can still capture a market rally as and when that takes place. One final thing to mention is that market volatility, like the spell we've seen, can either validate or invalidate your approach to risk. That's really important that you take the right amount of risk going forward. It can be a shock if it's the first time of experiencing that kind of volatility, if you're a newer investor, say, and it can be pause for thought in terms of your approach. So you need to think about whether things need to be altered going forward, and in the medium term, that you can take some lessons from that experience. And any top-ups to your ISA or pension allowances can reflect that as well.
Rob, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello, it's Simon Lambert here from the This Is Money podcast. I really hope that you're enjoying listening to the podcast as much as we enjoy making it, but we would like to make it even better for you. So we're running a short survey to find out more about what you, our listeners, want to hear about so that we can continue to bring you the podcast episodes that will make you love This Is Money even more. It only takes a couple of minutes and it will be hugely valuable to us. We really appreciate your feedback. The link is in the show notes, or you can come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast to find it. Thank you very much. And now back to the episode.
Welcome back. Given that Helen got us onto tariffs within the first 5 minutes, so sorry. I feel like we do need to some kind of touch on it. I'm not sure if Helen's just holding up her finger there to say very small. The thumb and the index finger, very small amount. Yes, Helen, it's going to be a very small amount. But we will touch on tariffs. The markets have been all over the place, a bit like Trump's economic policy. But while many tariffs have been paused for 90 days, investors are still betting, as Helen said, that the Bank of England will cut interest rates 3 or 4 more times this year as a result. So where are we at? Is China set to be the last global superpower standing? I'm not sure if you want to answer that question, Helen, but given markets are rebounding, is everything all right again now? Was it all just a much ado about nothing?
Okay, so I'll do a really super quick rundown of the madness of the last few days. Monday, stock markets open after obviously the tariff announcements late last week, and they absolutely tank, basically across the board. Not good. Tuesday, starts being some rumours that Trump might be willing to negotiate on some of the tariffs. Markets recover a little bit. Wednesday morning, tariffs start, more falls. China, Wednesday afternoon, hits the US with an 84% tariff. Wednesday evening, Trump pauses the tariffs for 90 days on everyone but China, which now has 125% tariffs. That actually doesn't affect the UK, though, because countries with a 10% tariff, of which we were one, aren't affected because of the 10% sort of baseline is still in place. And then Thursday, gains on the markets again. And by the time you hear this podcast, who on earth knows? A little disclaimer there. Who knows what might happen in the coming hours and days?
Right. So what do we do, Helen? What do we do?
I think we keep calm. We don't make any sudden moves. Simon talked about this last week. This worries people who have investments, right? People who've got a pension, people who might be close to retirement, anyone who's got money invested in the stock market. I think the age-old advice still stands. I mean, it's boring to say, but don't panic. Mm-hmm. Stay invested, ride it out. We actually looked at the last times that stock markets crashed over the last few years, and they always tend to recover in a matter of months. So definitely don't panic and sort of take money out and crystallize losses is generally the advice from the experts. It's super difficult to do when, you know, you're seeing all this absolute madness, but keep calm is always the age-old advice, really.
Thank you very much, Helen. I want to follow on from the idea that the Bank of England will cut interest rates 3 or 4 more times this year. Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen. This is all just what markets are betting at the moment. That doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen, but I'm just going to say, what does that mean for savings rates? Now, spoiler alert, while we've just heard some better news for mortgage rates, it's probably not going to be the same for savings, I'm afraid. So what should you be doing? Helen, just explain, why would savings rates likely fall?
As you say, so when mortgage rates go down, savings rates also tend to go down. That's because they're sort of based on the Bank of England's base rate, based on the base rate, which is to do with the cost of borrowing. So as that goes down, savings rates will also go down, which has already been happening over the last year, year and a half or so since that has been coming down. So this is really the continuation of a trend that was already happening. However, it might sort of just speed things up a little bit. Again, I should say that these predictions were based on before the tariffs were paused. However, people are still predicting that the base rate could come down quicker this year than before. And if that happens, savings rates, it's not looking great. So we spoke to James Blower from the Savings Guru, the savings website, and he said rates are likely to fall further than we initially expected this year. While we're not going to see the end of 4% rates immediately, we are likely to see rates fall back starting in May, when we're almost certain the base rate will fall to 4.25%. So he says he thinks 4% rates will be around for a few more months, but they are definitely in danger. And if the base rate does go to 3.5 by the end of the year, as people are predicting, he thinks easy access rates will go down to the low 3% bracket, which I should say, it looks bad in comparison to where rates have been over the last couple of years. You know, we've seen 5% plus, but, you know, look back to before the pandemic when rates are 1-2%, it's still not the worst, but not moving in the direction that savers would want it to be.
Quite. Where can you find the best rates though, Helen?
There are still some really decent rates out there. So easy access, your best rate is 4.75%. That's with Atom Bank. Looking at ISAs, the rates are even tastier. So at the end of the last tax year, there was a bit of a battle between these sort of app-based savings providers kept one-upping each other on rates. So at the moment, you can get an easy access ISA with Plum with a rate of 5.92%. However, you have to be aware that a lot of these accounts have these bonus rates that only last for 3 months, and the rate will drop over that. So, important to double check what you're getting and make sure you're not sort of too tempted by a short term win. The best rate that isn't hasn't got a short term boost though is the Tembo Cash ISA, which is 4.8%. So, still some decent rates out there. Something people might also want to look into if they think the base rate and savings rates are going to go down is to look at a fixed term savings account. Now, it's important to only do that if you don't want to, you don't need to touch your money for that period of time because it's you need to leave it safe for that year period to get the full interest. But if you are in a position where you're able to commit some of your savings in that way, it might be a good idea because in a year's time, if rates are much lower, you've locked into that rate. So, average 1 year fixed savings rate is 4.19%, according to MoneyFacts. But you can get a 1 year deal from Synergy Bank paying 4.65. So it might seem odd that that's around the same level as an easy access, but the idea is that months down the line, that will start to look like a better deal. So, something to bear in mind if you've got a bit of cash that you can lock away for a while.
Helen, thank you very much on that. Finally, honestly, I'm saying it again. Trump's tariffs. Could they mean big bargains on TVs, clothes, mortgages, and energy bills? You have an article on this, so that's the suggestion. Is that the case? And if so, how can you snap them up?
It might well be. So, this is based on the idea that, again, when the tariffs come, presumably come back into force after now being paused, that countries will have goods that they've already produced that they would have sent to the US, but now want to send elsewhere because of the big tariffs. So, it's the idea that some of these goods might start to flood shops in the UK, basically because we'll charge them less for bringing them in. So we spoke to Sophie Wilmot, who's a director at the retail analyst Global Data, and she thinks that we could see surplus stock in areas such as clothes made in Asia and also things like TVs, which again predominantly come from some of those Asian countries, which look like they will be hit by quite high tariffs. I think it would be quite short-lived, is the sense that people are getting because they want to get rid of what they've got quickly and then they'll kind of change their strategy. But what's being forecast is essentially a bit of a fire sale on things like clothes and TVs because these companies don't want them sort of collecting dust in a warehouse. They'd rather get them into shops in other countries, flog them quickly, then see what the mad world economy throws them next and how they can kind of deal with it. So, I mean, it's the world's going mad, but you might want to get a cheap HD TV. So it's all good, really, isn't it?
Marvelous. I mean, that is honestly, when you put it that way, Helen, all I will say to that is probably a lot of countries already have in place or will have very soon mechanisms to stop that sort of dumping, because of course that's not great for internal economies. But we shall see. If it does mean we can get a cheap TV, do you know what, Helen? I'm really annoyed if that's the case, because last week I bought my mum a TV. I know, I'm the best daughter. I know, thank you very much. I just couldn't bear going around to her house and having to deal with this old, like literally, this was older than I am. And so I bought a new TV, so I'll be gutted if prices drop, because I could have got one for cheaper. But never mind. Anyway, Helen, thank you so much for this week, and thank you for listening. You can keep up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you have any comments or questions for the team or anything you'd like them to look into, here's our Simon with a quick reminder.
You can email us at podcast@thisismoney.co.uk. Send us in your question of the week and we will try to answer it. Come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast to find all podcasts past and look us up on social media.
And talking of reminders, remember to fill in that survey. You'll be doing us a great service. Thank you so much. And if you like our podcast, why not rate us wherever you found us? It helps other people find us too.
Take control of your finances with Charles Stanley Direct. Invest, save, coach, or plan. Using technology where it's helpful and people where it matters. Our website and app make trading cost-effective and flexible. But we're more than just an online investment service. We're here for you regardless of your financial needs or if your life takes an unexpected turn. Your finances, your way. Take control today with Charles Stanley Direct. Sign up now.
Investment involves risk.